Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Coach's Corner. I'm Coach Andrew Porras from Ingenuity Coaching. I help people to discover and fulfill their passions and greatness. My mission, to inspire and challenge you to dream big dreams, and with my coaching, help you to manifest those dreams into reality. You can visit my website at www.myfuturecoach.com and follow me on Twitter at Coach Andrew. Today is Labor Day, and today I'm doing a very special show. I have my dad, Art Porras, joining us today. My dad has been around areas like promotions, public relations, and all kinds of areas in sports for many years, and I just thought it would be fun to have a conversation with my dad right here on Blog Talk Radio. So that's going to be my introduction. Dad, are you here?
I'm here.
Hey, Dad.
Hey. Hey, listen, I got to call you Andy. I know that you go by the name of Andrew, but I have grandfather clause. I can only call you Andy. Do you mind?
You got that from my grandfather or from yourself?
No, it's known as a grandfather clause. But I'm asking you, do you mind? I can
don't
switch.
Mind. I always say you made me. You could call me whatever you want.
Thank you very much.
And
very nice of you.
You're very welcome. Speaking of making me, today was a very interesting day for me. I went back, I like to say, to the scene of the crime, Dad. I went back to Milford, Connecticut, which is where I was conceived in roughly the middle of October of 1955. I remember very little about that night. It was a dark and stormy night. I crashed into this big round thing, got knocked out for 9 months. But I like to say it's the only race I've ever won in my life.
Andy, don't make me laugh. That's too much.
Thank you,
Milford.
Very much.
I wonder what it looks like today.
Yeah, I was saying to my friend, I was bike riding throughout the town of Milford, and I felt like I was in one of those. Have you ever seen a model railroad set, you know, one of those big model railroads, like the kind that Frank Sinatra used to play with? And
yeah, sure.
It looked like a model railroad town. Like, everything about it was very quaint. I took a bunch of pictures of some people who were, not people, but the gravestones and some stones that go back to the 1600s, 1700s, very old town.
It's funny you should say that because, you know, your mom was working in New York City, and I would pick her up at the New Haven Railroad Station at Milford every day. And you know what I was working at in Milford, right?
Of course, the New Haven Register.
That's right. And I was off early enough to pick her up, and she worked in New York City until pretty late in that time. I hope not too late as far as you're concerned. That's a joke, Andy.
Oh, I get it. Well, I was, you know, in those days, I just ordered in womb service, so it was okay.
Yeah, you do make me laugh.
Well, let me say, anybody, I've been told by many people I make them laugh, but you are the source. I like to say, that's my dad. If you have met me and if I've made you laugh, you've kind of met my dad. Yes, you're where I got that sense of humor from, a good part of it.
And that's nice of you to say that. Very nice.
Oh, shucks.
Shucks is right.
Shucks. So,
yeah.
So you back in the day, you had a very kind of a fascinating career. And, you know, one of the things I've been thinking about, and one of the reasons I would think it would be fun to have you on the show, today everybody talks about social media, and I don't even know if you know what I mean when I say social media, but that's all the stuff that's online.
No, Facebook, Twitter, I'm not dumb.
Okay. Oh, you're with it. You're hep.
I'm with it, yeah.
So today, everything is social media. Everything is instantaneous. Everything is that, you know, you could do from your phone, your computer. You can just blink your eyes and something can happen. But back in the day, it took a lot different type of work, a lot different type of communications with people. And I'm very curious to hear, like, what was it like back then? In the area of, say, public relations, in particular, some of the areas, how would you connect with people, some of the things you used to do, like publicity stunts?
All on the telephone, strictly telephone. You'd make a call, you'd have a contact, or there would be a network of contacts, and you'd use the phone. Well, I guess pretty much it's still used today, but there was nothing else that you could use. I mean, you know, you don't use a telegram, just phone. You pick up a phone, you dial it. Do you remember dialing?
You dial a phone, and
you get a contact, and you talk your heart out very often. I mean, to make something happen. I mean, that's my recollection. I had to do a lot of talking, and things happened. I was lucky, fortunate, and in some respects, I guess, pretty good in certain areas, and I made it work.
Well, what was your biggest skill in that area?
Well, I think it was communication with people. I think that was my long suit. That was what got me through. The ability to talk to people, not only on the phone, but after a meeting was set up,
mm-hmm.
and I had to make a presentation of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
I was pretty good at that, and I was pretty good on give and take, which is part of it. And it worked well for me in some of the, and of course there were failures too. Don't get me wrong. Many times I tried and talked for absolutely no purpose at all. But those were fewer than my so-called hits.
Do you remember one that was like they call like a big get, like when you got a big interview on TV or something? What was a big get for you? I can't believe I got this guy on the phone and he said,
well,
yes.
in my early career, I'll tell you a funny thing. Early TV, I was doing PR with a PR firm for I'm trying to remember the name. This is going back over 50 years ago, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And it was for the New York Dental Society, I think was the name of it.
Wow.
The New York Dental, I think that was the name of it. Anyway, it was a group of dentists. And the idea was to publicize the group and the dentistry in general. And I would put guests, I would get guests on local television shows.
Mm-hmm.
And the angle would be that somehow they got into the subject of dentistry. I don't remember exactly how, but I got your aunt once. I got her on, talking about her experience with her wonderful experience getting her teeth capped on the Maury Amsterdam show. He was
Wow.
a comedian at the time. And things of that kind. I did a lot of the TV. I set up interviews. I remember once on, I can't think of the name of the show, but another guest was, there was an actor named Robert Wagner who's now doing infomercials.
Yeah, he does, had a reverse mortgage and then
yeah.
rip off your grandfather. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah,
kidding.
Well,
the
go ahead, rip
stopped.
It off. I wouldn't do business with him because
yeah.
I still remember how rude he was.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, he practically shoved your aunt out of the way. Because he was coming on and it was time, and he was very rude to her.
Which aunt was this, by the way? You didn't.
Aunt Ruthie.
Ah, Aunt Ruthie.
Yeah.
Wow.
Your mom's sister.
Yes. But you got to. Did you get to meet Maury Amsterdam, by the way?
Of course.
Oh, because
before the show, yeah.
You just described him as a comedian, but to me, anybody growing up in my era, he was from the Dick Van Dyke Show. A buddy from the Big Dick Van Dyke show.
This was before the Dick Van Dyke show.
Well,
that'll
course.
Tell you
but,
how.
But,
how.
But as, just for people who might want to know, who is that guy? Who I heard of that name, Maury Amsterdam. He actually just died a year or two ago when he was like mid.
Well, into his, I think, 90 something. Yeah.
Yeah.
But he was a comedian, and he did a talk. But I don't even think they called it a talk show. He was just the host of a show. And he would have guests on it and talk, and it was mostly guests, interviews, and that kind of thing. And he's a funny guy, you know. And that's the kind of thing that I did. There was the dentistry, and then there was one of my favorite. Are we on to the subject of the my early PR days?
Sure, why not? Absolutely, whatever.
Yeah,
whatever happens is. All natural.
Well, I remember setting up. Now, this is where I set up a deal for coverage in the New York zoo in the Bronx, the Bronx Zoo in New York,
and
for the annual examination of the hippopotamus for their teeth. How about that?
Wow.
That was one of the bits I did. And, in fact, I was going with your mom at the time. We weren't even married. And she was outside the gates of the zoo and was watching me. I was inside with the dentist, the zoo dentist, examining a hippo's teeth.
Oh, you were in the hippo area, like where the public doesn't go?
You know, the public sees it through the bars.
Sure, but you were.
And I got in with the dentist.
Wow.
And the camera. There was a camera, of course, and the idea was to, I don't remember the idea, except it was crazy. I got in there, and it was I got great compliments for getting the hippo's teeth examined on TV.
That would have taken a very thick floss, I think.
There you did it again. That's right. That was a big floss.
Big floss.
Yeah, but things of that kind, that I don't think they even think of doing stuff like that today, but who knows? I'm not that close to it.
But you got to spend time with some of the people from the founding days of TV and the local TV, which a lot of the local TV doesn't even exist anymore.
Yeah, that's true. This was all in New York, you know.
Yeah.
I'm not there now, but this was early, fairly early television. Not the what I would call the pioneer days of TV, but and the mid and late 50s.
Mm-hmm.
Television was maybe 10 years old, or 8 to 10 years old at the time.
But we still in those days, we had what, six channels maybe. We had 2, 4
Did you say
five,
six channels or six channels?
Six.
Oh, okay.
No, the healthy channels. Two,
okay.
4, 5, 7, 9, and 11. And then channel 13, which kind of didn't count because that was the educational channel.
Right.
We didn't count that then. That was like,
that's
pretty much
what it was. I don't remember any other channel at the time, actually.
But
I don't remember it.
They all went off early. You didn't have
right.
TV all night long, except for maybe channel 2. Which was CBS, and they went most of the night. And those were very different days. Today we have you might have 500 or 1,000 channels. Go spend an hour and a half playing around with the remote control, and then say there's nothing on.
It's a different world, completely different as far as TV is concerned. I'd say I had a much easier time dealing with 5, 6 channels than anybody trying to get on. You know, the I guess what they get on now is Ellen DeGeneres and people like that get their clients on.
And not too much of that's of course a national show, and not too much of the real local programming is around the way it was, because even the local channels have a lot of syndicated shows.
Exactly. different world.
So you were involved in the TV, but then how did you wind up in the sports arena?
Oh, that's just such a long-winded story. I'm trying to remember myself the very first. But I got closely involved in my advertising agency day. By the way, you haven't mentioned it, but I'm an original madman. Did you know that?
I did know that, but I'm glad you reminded me. My dad.
Yeah, because now that I'm making me think about it, this was the early 1960s, and in the early 1960s, I was vice president of an advertising agency on Madison Avenue. So that made me an original madman. And in that time, I had a client called Howard Clothes, which does not exist anymore. It was a retail chain of men's clothing, I got them involved with the New York Mets, if you could believe it. On the very first year, they came. I got together with them, and they asked me if I could put together ticket-selling apparatus in their stores, for the Mets, for the New York Mets baseball team, which I proceeded to do over a period of months. This was actually 1961, first first season, I believe it was 1962.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got into all kinds of promotion. You talk about promotional activities. I got a whole slew of stuff and publicity that was really mind-boggling at the time by having contest hitting signs in the beginning in the polo grounds where they started. You, of course, were like 5 years old at the time, mm-hmm. so you don't have any recollection
but
of that.
But did you take me there?
To where?
To the polo grounds.
I don't remember. Do you remember?
I don't remember, but I'm so curious to know if I was ever in the polo grounds, because I'm old enough to have gone to the polo grounds since it existed, and I now, by the way, live within walking distance of what was the polo grounds.
No, I don't think I don't recall taking you to the polo grounds. I just don't. I know that I took you, of course, to the Yankee Stadium when I got involved with the football Giants.
Yes.
That was the whole different story. That was another thing that I was able to work with the Giants, and I did also for the Howard Close client. I got in 1963 or 64, a most valuable player, and it happened to have been Y.A. Tittle. Now, I know you met him because you
mm-hmm.
almost embarrassed me. If you could
oh,
remember.
Oh, tell everybody. I don't mind. I think it's
sure?
a very funny. Yeah, I absolutely.
Well, Wyatt Tittle, who's a Hall of Famer and a big-time quarterback who had been traded to the New York Giants, and the Giants became a very powerful championship team, thanks mostly to Tittle, and he won the award that I set up, and the award was a 24 or 25-foot Owens yacht, Sleeps 4, and it was presented at Yankee Stadium to Tittle. And it got a lot of coverage because Tittle told the newspaper reporters covering the Giants, what is he going to do with a yacht? He's never been on water before in his life. So it was a terrific
publicity.
Did you
mention that was his nickname because of his initials? It was basically
yeah,
Y.A.
Tittle is called, became a yachtsman. Yeah. So the thing that you were—I think you were 5 years old or six.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure exactly how old, but anyway, Y.A. and his wife came to our apartment in Bayside, Queens.
Mm-hmm.
And you were in the bedroom. And if anybody doesn't know, Y.A. Tittle is totally bald—not in the fashionable sense of today, but he was just bald. Period.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And you were in your room. And the mom called you out, and you didn't know who was coming or anything. You came out, and there was Y.A. and his wife, and I had introduced them to mom. You took one look at his head, and you started to yell, "The man in the moon! The man in the moon!" And mom shooed you back into your room, and I had to apologize. But Tittle was wonderful. He said,
"Get that bald man out of my house."
I don't know if you said. I don't think you said the word.
I think
bald.
I did.
Did you?
And I think so. That's what I remember being told. That I vaguely I remember more the man on the moon thing. I remember.
Yeah,
being,
well, that's all I remember. The
really
man on the moon.
Crazed by his appearance. And
you,
now,
you
what is
back.
The great karma, Dad, of this incident of me and my reaction to the very
the
bald man?
The fact that today that you are, shall we say, hairless?
Yes.
Yeah, but fashionably so.
So
I mean, it's become a fashion thing.
Still, I always, sometimes I look in the mirror and I go, "Get that bald man out of my house," I think to myself.
You should say to yourself in the mirror, "The man in the moon is
man
back
the moon.
Again."
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, anyway, that was an embarrassment, but Tittle was very nice, and the PR effect of everything that was done there was enormous, and got a lot of credit for it. And it went on and on and on, and eventually I arranged for the entire team
mm-hmm.
to come to Puerto Rico under the sponsorship of the President Johnson's physical fitness program, and that was a big deal, really a big deal at the time. Probably very few people would remember that, but it happened in 1964. And that was a part of my sports background.
So what was that like? So you were basically bringing the concept of American football to Puerto Rican kids who know basically soccer, right?
What was the outcome of that?
You know, what was that like? What was
It was a film. It was on TV. In fact, I just uncovered it in my closet. After like almost 50 years, I found the film, and when you were visiting, you helped me find some place where I could get it converted into a DVD.
Yes.
And I got a big kick out of watching it again, so it was a lot of fun.
Now, I didn't get to see more than a few minutes of it at the time, but I recall that there were celebrities of the day in there, and of course all the big stars. Of the Giants, I don't know who remembers all these people other than us.
Hey Andy, do you remember another embarrassing moment that you gave me in the Giants locker room?
Yes.
You do?
I do. Yes.
I hesitate to mention it or to remind you.
Sure.
It's up to you whether you want me to say anything.
Oh, go for it. I
have to be careful. I have to be careful how I phrase it, though. Well. Try to remember. On a Saturday, when I was the MC of a kids promotion, did with the Giant players, and you and your brother Jonathan, at the end of that, were in the Giant locker room. Recall?
Yes.
And all of that bunch of players were coming out of the shower. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I was sitting talking to the coach, name of Allie Sherman at the time. And you were sitting right near me, and one of the players, I'm not going to mention his name because just say he's a big, big strapping guy.
Yes.
And let's see how I could put this. He was built very enormously, let's put it that way. But it caught your eye, and you ran over to me and you said, "Hey, Dad," I still want to close my eyes and forget this, but... I remember it too well. Why don't you have something like that in the when you come out of the shower? Something to that effect. Entire locker room burst into a huge belly laugh. And the coach had something to say to me. And it was something. It was some scene. Another embarrassing moment from my number one son. That was it.
Well, it was certainly as an impressionable young child of whatever age I was.
You sure was.
I think I was 27 at the time.
you were. Let's
probably
see.
Probably about 11 years old, 11 or 12.
No, you were younger than that.
Really? Was I? I
think well, 1963 or 57.
It was 65 or 66. So I was 9 or 10 years old.
Well, you were?
Yeah, I was at 9 or 10 years. I think it was 65.
Okay,
or 66,
nine years old.
Even
you should have known better, Andy.
I probably should have known better, but I think I was just so astonished to see that this giant naked black man. And
yeah, you had to bring the black man, and that was
well,
not
otherwise
necessary.
People wouldn't really know what I'm talking about.
Okay.
So it's like that Blazing Saddles. It's true. It's true. absolutely. So that was a. I don't remember saying that. I do remember seeing it and being like.
No, you said it.
And being very, of course, later in life disappointed. And what are you going to do,
Oh, stop.
I thought that's what we all were getting, when we.
Yeah.
I didn't know. Okay, but now I know. But yeah, the thing out of all the things that impressed me. Now, what you have to understand, anybody listening to this, I grew up in this kind of a rarefied atmosphere that the average boy of my age would have been out of their minds with glee, and I was really not. I didn't know anything much about sports, and this is the usual way of life. And I would get to do things like hang out in the locker room and hang out on the field and play in the dugout, at the Mets game and all this stuff. And the thing that impressed me more than anything that I can recall in the New York Giants locker room was the fact that they had piled as high as the ceiling and with a square footage of, I'm going to say, around 20 feet around, every bottle of soda of every brand that you could possibly think of. This was, wow, you become a sports guy. You get all this soda. I was so, Yoo-hoo, that back then I thought Yoo-hoo was a health drink. Coca-Cola, 7-Up. I mean, whatever you could think of, it was there and as much as you'd want.
Funny how that would be the most impressionable thing that happened to you from your sports experience.
That was, I mean, come on. I mean, how could you could hardly beat that when you think of it.
I mean, the fact that I introduced you to Tom Seaver, a Hall of Fame pitcher, in the dugout of the New York Mets, that didn't impress you, right?
What impressed me was Tom Seaver was such a nice guy. Again, 1965, so I'm 9 years old, in the dugout, and this young man comes over, my brother and I are sitting there, and he says, hi, kids, my name is Tom Seaver. I'm a pitcher now with the New York Mets. Nice to meet you. Would you like my autograph? He actually asked us. I mean, and this is a guy who later became known for, he doesn't really like to sign autographs, but would you like my autograph? Sure, whoever you are. I had no idea who this guy was. He was a rookie, of course, that year. And went on to become the amazing Tom Seaver. But I just remember, what a nice fellow, you know. And I also remember trying on Jerry Grody's glove, Jerry Grody, the catcher of the New York Mets. And he must have had a gigantic hand. So I remember his glove was twice the size of my head. That impressed me.
I don't remember that at all. So that's good. I'm glad you have some positive memories of that. I've always told your brother that he doesn't give any high marks to me for the sports background that I gave both you boys. He doesn't seem to have any interest, and I didn't think you did either until right now.
Speaking of my brother, do you remember the wonderful moment where he got to meet his childhood hero?
Name him.
Jerry Kuzman.
I don't remember that. Go ahead, tell me.
It was where we got to meet Jerry Kuzman. He was like, oh, I love Jerry Kuzman. I can really love him. He's my favorite player. And then we got to meet Jerry Kuzman at a Howard Close.
You were kids?
Yeah, we were kids. You had one of the events, and the players would come, and you get to meet the players and get an autograph. And you brought us, and, oh, Jerry, it's my son. You're his favorite Matt, and goes, no, I like Ron Hunt.
Oh, yeah, but it wasn't, I don't think it was Jerry Kuzman. I think it was the first, well, what's the difference? I don't remember that, but that's good. I mean, that you recall it, yeah. Yeah, that was another moment of embarrassment, but not really. You know, it was just a lot of fun. You know, that was good. All right, I'm glad you have good memories of that. So over the years, I thought, oh, you guys were really spoiled when
well,
it came to all these sports heroes that kids today and you know even of that time would have given their left arm to meet, and you played with them practically. So I'm glad you have good memories.
The other player came to the house, Aaron Thomas, number 88. Tight end of the New York Giants in the late 60s, and very tall, handsome fellow.
Yeah, and you were nice to him, I think, right?
Yeah, and I told my friends, or people who weren't even my friends, now they were my friends because they wanted to get to meet Aaron Thomas. We had a whole bunch of kids come over, and for a while there, I was like, hey, I'm the cool kid. I got him in to meet, you know, Aaron Thomas, you know what I'm saying?
Andy, I didn't even know that, and that's good to hear.
Oh yeah,
I'm learning things, you know.
Got a little leverage going on there. Yeah, I have. I don't remember a lot of this. But every so often, I'll talk to somebody. Thanks to Facebook. Speaking of going back to the beginning, we're talking about social media. So I now have recreated a lot of the friendships and connections that I've ever had in my entire life. Of friends going back to the age of 3, even a lot of junior high and high school friends, and I at least 3 or 4 times I've been reminded of You and your dad brought me to the Giants game. I did. Like, we did? You know, and apparently that was, something that we got to do a few times was, like, yo, you want to take one of your buddies to the game? And, okay.
Yo, you went to plenty of games. Well,
oh, I went to a million games, but I didn't recall until these guys, I say kids, who are now very ancient, we don't want to say how old, who would say to me, oh, man, I never forget the time you took me to the Giants game, and we got to sit in the press ledge, and it was... got to see all these amazing people, and what a day! I never experienced anything like that. And I'm thinking, oh, I'm glad. And then I'm going inside. I don't remember even doing that. Really, I did. Okay, I guess I was a good kid.
You were a good kid. The both of you were good kids.
Thanks.
But,
I'll give you $5 later. For
you
that.
You just reminded me of it's not only sports, but. Do you know the time I met Billie Holiday, the singer? I don't know how many people know her, of her, Billie Holiday.
Oh,
great
jazz singer. Even though she's long, long gone, there's very few people who don't know who she is. But yes, I know that you met.
You know the time. Well, because it reminded me of high school buddies. That this was in the time that I was in the Navy on Liberty. And the two high school buddies and neighborhood buddies on the same street in Brooklyn, and we were all jazz fans. And I think I've told you this, or have I?
You have told me a particular version, but I'm going to just let you go.
No, what do you mean? There's only one version,
oh.
Andy. I mean, there's no competing versions. Of
oh,
this.
Okay. I mean, I don't know if I know the story then. Let's say so.
Oh. Well, we were on Liberty. This was 1946.
Oh, okay, yeah. So you were in Liberty. So you were in the service
in New York.
Okay.
We were in the, we all together. We were all neighborhood guys. We happened to be home on Liberty at the same time, and we were all jazz fans. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And we went one night to the Three Deuces nightclub on 52nd Street, which was the jazz street.
Yeah.
Is that what you remember?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. And we're there to see, I think if I remember, a piano player named Teddy Wilson was
wow.
playing. And we both see, with the three of us, are sitting there having a beer, whatever. And about 10 feet away, we see a woman with a big flower in her hair sitting at the bar. And it was Billie Holiday. So the guys said, hey, we got to go over. You know, we're all fans of hers. But I was the only one with the nerve to go over to her. I said, well, go over. Come on, you know. So they took a vote, and they said, you go over, me. And I walked over, and I said, as I approached her, I remember saying, hello, Miss Holiday. And you know what she said to me? I'll never forget it, and this is going back a lot of years. She said, get away from me, you creep. That was what she said to me.
Wow.
And I literally skulked away, I mean, like almost backwards, back to my seat in the table with the two guys. They heard it. She was only about 10 feet away. And she said, get away, you creep. Well, I was so pissed off at her, if you don't mind me saying that, you know,
yeah.
Really mad. And I was mad for years and years, and I didn't even want to listen to her records for the way she talked to me. And to us, she really was, you know, the three of us. Until one night, I remember this very vividly. We were watching, Mom and I were watching 60 Minutes, I think it was. It was on TV. And it was a bio what's her name again?
Billie Holiday.
Billie Holiday, thank
yeah.
you.
Yeah.
And it was a bio of Billie Holiday, and they got to the part when she was 14 or 15 in the hometown of Baltimore. She was raped, assaulted by three sailors somewhere in 1920-some, whatever it was.
Wow.
Raped and assaulted by three sailors, okay? And then it was like a thunderbolt hit me. That was the whole point of her saying, get away from me, you creep. There were three sailors. That's what she thought of us. So anyway, that program revived my entire feeling about Billie Holiday, and I became a fan again. And I guess the only point I can say is things change over, this was 20 or 30 years later. that my attitude about Billie Holiday changed from watching 60 Minutes.
You know, it's funny. That's called a perspective shift because you were able to see somebody in a completely different light from a completely different angle. That's one of the things that I do, by the way, as a coach, is I help people to see a new perspective. And sometimes just seeing something in a completely different light changes your entire feeling, your attitude, your actions. And I would imagine that if somehow you knew that back in 1946.
You know, I wish you were a coach at that time and you could have explained perspective to me, that there possibly is a side to the story that I did not know about.
Mm.
And it took, I didn't wait to be explained.
Of course
for
not.
It to be explained. It was pure luck that I was watching that program. Or to this day, I'd be anti-Billie Holiday. But that, you know, I don't think you could blame me for my feeling. I was very insulted by her treatment. And I remember very vividly that I called her Miss Holiday. I didn't have the nerve to call her Billie.
Mm.
I said Miss Holiday, so it wasn't a question of I came up in any advanced way, and I needed that perspective. Andy, where were you when I needed you?
I don't even think I was a gleam in your eye at that time.
Now 1946, not a gleam in anything, and that was nothing was gleaming, but. That's an interesting thing. I never heard that explained as a change in perspective, but that's exactly what happened. Good point.
So in fact, it always used to puzzle me that, because I didn't know this story growing up, that you were the hugest Frank Sinatra fan, which of course you have instilled in me. I am the huge, huge Frank Sinatra fan and a fan of the music of your era as much as of any of my eras.
Hey, Mom was too, by the way.
Mom was too, and Mom was a Bobby Soxer at the
Paramount
Theater.
No, she was a pre-Bobby Soxer. She was not quite in the old enough. She was a couple of years shy of being a Bobby Soxer, but she was a pre-Bobby Soxer.
I was a male
version.
A story that I've been telling for the last 40 years. Sorry.
Well, she was a Bobby Soxer,
okay,
but if you're telling stories, I was a male version of a Bobby Soxer because when he came up, I was in high school in the early 40s, right? When he came up with Tommy Dorsey from Harry James and so forth, and there were three guys, not the same ones that were in the Navy, three different guys. I still remember their names. And by some remote possibility that anybody's listening, it was Ben and Bob and myself were all Sinatra fans, and we were the only boys in the entire school, Lincoln High in Brooklyn, that were fans of Sinatra because the girls were crazy about him, so it was like a sissy thing to be a Sinatra fan at that time. Did you know that, Andy?
No.
It really was.
So that would be like today being a teen boy and being a Justin Bieber fan.
Maybe that's a good way of looking at it. But we loved Sinatra's voice, and I remember saying he's going to be a star. I don't want to sound like I know it all, but we all three of us said this guy's terrific, and they were all talking guys like Bob Ebley, who was terrific, by the way, or later Dick Hames. And they laughed at Frank Sinatra, at the girls. Every girl in that school was crazy about him. So that's what we were looked upon as strange guys.
You were Argyle Soxers or something.
Yeah. Well, whatever. But that's kind of interesting. And we've remained. I've remained a Sinatra fan to this day, as you know.
As I know. And but I was saying that it was confusing to me why now Billie Holiday, of course, was a huge influence on Frank Sinatra, and yet you were not at all. You never explained it to me. You just said, "Oh, no, I don't care for her," and I couldn't understand why. I later got explored her music as well, although I never became the Billie Holiday fan the way I've been a Frank Sinatra fan.
Frank Sinatra
is my musical, my musical
guru.
Muse.
Yeah.
And I was very fortunate to have gotten to see, not the young Sinatra, but I got to see I believe 8 times I got to see Frank Sinatra perform, including, of course, the concert I brought you and Mom to back in 1975.
Hey, I still remember that. That was fantastic of you to do. I remember that was at the what theater was that?
It was called the Eurus Theater, which I can't think of the name
the
of that
date?
Theater.
And it was
it's
what
a
year?
Broadway theater today. This was 1975.
Wow.
And it had originally been the Capitol Theater.
You sure about that?
Yeah, I'm almost positive that it was originally the Capitol Theater and it became the
Eurus
Theater.
Oh, wait, you're right. The Capitol Theater, which I had gone to many, many, many times. Did I ever tell you about my first Frank Sinatra, or I should say second Frank Sinatra concert?
No.
Show. I went to Frank Sinatra at the New York Paramount, right, when I was in high school. I went to see him. Well, my second time was when I was on Liberty from boot camp in the Navy, and Frank Sinatra was again appearing at the Paramount, and he was really at the height of his fame and everything. And I came in alone, and of course, mostly women, girls,
mm-hmm.
and the rush to the stage after he appeared, I was knocked down almost, and lost my cap, fell out,
wow,
and somebody pulled my neckerchief. And I walked. I had to escape the theater, almost, you know, out of uniform. In fact, I was out of uniform. Luckily, I was able to find a subway because I lived in Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
Got on there, and no shore patrol. I would have been picked up and put in a brig. I was totally out of uniform. No neckerchief, no hat, no cap. Thanks to the girls who ran down the aisle. I was somewhere in the middle, and. That was
Did you get to stay for the show or not?
No, I stayed for the show. This was after the show.
Oh, after the show. Okay.
After the show, when he was saying goodbye and all that, the rush down the aisles was tremendous, and I escaped, literally.
Wow.
That was my second time. So yours was about the the 10th time that I went to see a Sinatra, but it was great. It was a great. I still remember that. That was a terrific gift you got.
So this is when you were still in the service. So you're talking about what you were in the service from basically what 1945 to?
Yeah, 45. I actually enlisted in 44. I graduated Lincoln High, my favorite school, Lincoln High, in June 1944, and I enlisted later, but I was called up in early 45. So back from boot camp, this was 45 when
mm-hmm.
he did the show. Yeah.
Now speaking of Lincoln, I don't know if you even remember this, but when I went to high school and I went to Bayside High School, I would imagine the first thing you would have noticed was that Bayside High and Lincoln High were nearly identical.
They were identical.
Yeah.
Same architect.
Same guy.
Yeah.
He made, there were like 4 or 5 identical schools. One was Walton High in the Bronx, which is, I think it's a girls' school.
My sister went to Walton High. Isn't that funny? I just thought of it when you mentioned it. Yeah.
In fact, because I went briefly to Lehman College in the Bronx, which is next door to Walton, and when I was walking around there as a freshman, and I'm walking around, and all of a sudden, there's Bayside High. What's it doing here in the Bronx? I felt like the end of Planet of the Apes when he finds the Statue of Liberty out in the city. He's like, what's this doing here?
Yeah,
I didn't know actually at that moment. It was just not during high school session, so it was just a completely dormant, empty building, giving more of that spooky feeling.
Yeah, and speaking of Bayside High, small world. Who was the principal of Bayside High? What was my connection to him?
Lester Spicer.
And the connection, what was
he
it?
He went to school with you. And
same
he,
class.
Same class, and he
same
wrote
graduating
the same,
class.
Then was he the editor or something of the high school magazine, maybe?
He wrote an article. Something. Yeah, but he was your principal, and he was my classmate at Lincoln High.
I never liked him. That's all I can tell you.
I met him. You remember meeting
him? I remember that.
That I met him, thanks to you?
Yeah, thanks to me. And very, 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 well, we don't want to talk about about that.
Well, you had a little problem. It happens to the best of them. Come on, Andy. I came to school, met Lester Spicer, and reminded him that I went to his class, and he better watch himself. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah,
I'm kidding.
I seem to recall he was doing something with bricks that he was removing through his body. No, I'm just kidding. Very nervous fellow, and he got, I guess you especially back in high school, you were.
You better be careful. I think he's
long gone.
Oh, is he really?
Yeah, I believe so. I believe he's gone.
Oh, sorry to hear that. That I truly am. I don't like to know about that.
So now I lost my thought. Actually, what were?
I was the Spicer.
Yeah, but why I was gonna. Well, it doesn't matter. So let's get back to some more fun stories. If you have any good stories about the Mad Men days, and I should also point out to my audience, anybody who's listening to this, when we're talking about the Mad Men days, and people, when you think of Mad Men, and I mean the Mad, is that the name of the television show, Mad Men, right?
Yeah, the name of the show is Mad Men. It has to do with an
Madison
advertising agency.
But the big star of the show is a guy named Don Draper.
Yeah.
Tall, handsome, the quintessential tall, dark, and handsome man. And let it not be missed here that you were a tall, dark, and handsome man of the Don Draper mold, well-dressed, and you, of course, you had the Howard clothes. Of course you're going to be well-dressed.
No, I never wore this.
I'm joking.
I shouldn't say that. But the company, that doesn't exist. They don't exist anymore.
But you were well-dressed. You were fashionable, tall, dark, and handsome. Man.
I don't know about that.
That's what the word on the street was.
No, but the thing is, Don Draper and I shared one thing. We were both vice presidents of a Madison Avenue advertising agency.
Yeah.
So did I ever tell you when I went to the emergency hospital, I was cut on my leg, and there was a male nurse, and we were talking about he brought it up, and I said, I'm really a madman. Oh, he said I was a madman because I told him that I was in the agency business of VP on Madison Avenue, and he got so excited that he was healing a madman that he called in all the nurses in the emergency room, and he was shouting, "I got a madman in the room! I got a madman!" and all these women, the nurses came in because that was when Mad Men just opened, was really a big hit. So that was a funny moment of the comparison of myself and the original Mad Men on TV.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you haven't asked me about my Jerry Lewis.
Oh, lady.
Okay. How does that go again, Andy?
Lady.
Let it be known, though, Andy, to the many millions of people who are tuned into this.
Two million people.
I am not a Jerry Lewis fan. In fact, I hope Jerry Lewis is listening, and I want him to know these many years later, I hate his guts. How's that?
Well,
is that
pretty? It's really the perfect day. It's the perfect day to say this, because today is the first anniversary of not having Jerry Lewis on the telethon as part of our Labor Day experience.
Oh, that's right.
I grew up every year Labor Day was devoted to, at least a part of it would be staying up all night watching Jerry Lewis telethon, and he's no longer on that. In fact, it's no longer, it's only like 6 hours now. So
By the by, Andy, it just occurred to me as I mentioned it, just off the top of my head, you really could have helped me with my perspective and forgiving Jerry Lewis with that perspective thing. Of why I hated him in the first place and have been holding that hatred for 60 years. Mm. Not hatred. That's too strong. I just disliked the guy for the way he treated me so many years ago. But if you were a coach somewhere or there was a coach like you, you could have healed me.
It's
instead, I've been going around, and anybody wants to talk about the Jerry Lewis and Dean Martin, I could tell them I hated Jerry, loved Martin. And that's, if you want me to tell you that or remind, I don't know if you know about it. I think you do.
I know you do. It's, but it is a great story. And so why don't you tell us? I believe you were.
But you could have, I really never heard of this phrase perspective of forgiveness. Is that what you're going?
No, it's not about forgiveness. It is a perspective shift where something is like forgiveness may be possible just because you now see something completely different than
you
ever thought.
Okay. You know something? After I tell this, and if you give me the right words, I'm going to forgive Jerry Lewis.
Okay.
1950.
This could be Jerry's gift.
51.
Tonight.
How many years ago is that? 50, 62, 61, 62 years ago. Okay. You give me the right words,
sure,
and I'm going to forgive Jerry Lewis.
Okay.
So here I was. Shortly after college graduation, I went to work for Music Corporation of America, which at the time was the number one talent agency, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I was more or less an apprentice agent. and I got the assignment at the height of Martin and Lewis, you know, Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis were partners at the time, just for anybody who doesn't know. And at the height of their huge fame, I was given a bunch of contracts for their next tour of the United States, but I needed signatures. That's what I was told. And I was basically a glorified messenger, okay? And bear in mind, I'm a year, just about a year younger than Jerry Lewis.
Mm-hmm.
So I go to the Paramount Theater. There I go again, and it's all the Paramount Theater. And, Andy, there were 10,000 kids outside the building, dying to get into the theater, waiting for the show to end and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to work my way through the crowd to the stage door. I had, the pass to get in. And I went upstairs to the dressing rooms to get their signatures. First place, Jerry Lewis's cubbyhole, dressing room.
Yeah.
Knock on the door and knocked, no answer. Anyway, finally, sort of grumpily said, "Come, what do you want?" Something like that. And there he was lying on the sofa, taking a nap between shows, which is so fine.
Yeah.
But as I walked in, I said, "Mr. Lewis," again, "Mr. Lewis,
yes.
I need your signatures from you, blah, 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 blah." He started to curse. He had something against my bosses at MCA. And he was cursing them, but he was giving it to me. He was yelling and using language that I had never heard before. And I'm from Brooklyn, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
I never heard the MF phrase, for example, at that time. I never heard it.
Wow.
And he was throwing that out at my boss, Freddie Fields, I think. He was throwing out these curse words and yelling and screaming and in the middle. And he was, "Give me a effing pen." And he signed a couple of things and more or less threw me out of the room. I was crushed, Andy, really crushed. But I went right next door to Dean Martin. I have to get his signature, and I'm expecting the worst, right? I knock on the door, and he says, "Come on in," And I meet, and Martin grabs my hand, puts his arm around my shoulder, calls me. I remember he called me Pally, which was the first time I heard the word Pally.
Hey, Pally.
"Hey, Pally, come on in, sit down. You want a drink?" He meant water, and he gave me some water because he saw that I was flushed, which I was. I was flushed with, what would you say, anger? Anger and embarrassment.
Sure.
Anyway, he was so nice to me, such a sweet man. He signed everything, and he said, "Hey, take it easy." And it wasn't until years later when I told this to somebody that they said, in the dressing rooms, there's just a thin wall separating them. I'm sure he heard Lewis yelling at you. And he wasn't too fond of Lewis at the time, probably. And this was his way of showing that. And but I still think to this day, Martin was just a terrific guy.
Yeah.
And that's how I remember him. And that's my story. And I'm stuck with it. There you go. So now give me the perspective. I'll forgive Jerry. And that's it.
Well, what you don't know, Dad, is that a few years earlier, three sailors had woken him up.
Never.
And he just never got over that.
Oh, you!
Great.
Why haven't I thought of that? That's such a great punchline. Why didn't I ever think of that? But if I ever tell it in conjunction with the Billie Holiday story, that's how I'm going to finish it, thanks to you.
Oh, okay, okay.
Great, I had three sailors woke him up. Okay,
never got sleep. Over that. So.
All right, well, anyway, that's truly good. That's funny.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Try the veal. We'll be here all week.
yeah. Anyway, listen, you're bringing back so many memories. I can't believe it that you've awakened the memory gland, I guess, huh?
Well, it's right next to the... The hypothalamoid gland.
Well, whatever, yeah. I'll go there.
I have no idea
what
you mean. But, I'm actually trying to think of, like, what would be the correct answer. I mean, I had to go there because that was just sitting there going, oh, I got to say this. Just sitting there going, I got to say this. But when you think about it, this is a tough one because, he's certainly there. You're not the object of his ire.
Right.
And yet his, basically unprofessionalism probably changed your life in a lot of ways because you didn't go in that direction.
Well, Andy, you're so right. You know that his outburst was a factor. I'm getting out of this so-called show business thing, I went to work for the New Haven Register as a reporter. Right after that, I said I'm out of show business. I mean, it wasn't directly linked because I always, I was a journalism major, so I really wanted to be in the newspaper business. But I was happy to leave show business, direct show business, thanks to Mr. Lewis.
Well,
so
he
was
may
a
have
change
done you
of
some
life.
Sort of a favor in a way by showing you this and you being in a position of saying, is this what I want in my life?
Right.
Am I up to that? And I don't think so. And therefore, I'm going to make a different choice that suits me.
Right, because I think at that time and maybe to this day, I was a little thin-skinned. So, taking that kind of abuse from this, who I used to think was a great comedian and so forth, but anyway, basically my age and talking to me that way, I had no use for him. So I left show business, and a major shift in my life was.
Well,
I'd
like
to
say, in fact, this is a subject that it's very dear to me. I'm actually writing about it. There is, in some respects, people show up in your life. People or things or events will show up in your life in such a way as to test you to see if this is what you really want, and they're there to throw you off, and in a way, that's their job. And the good news is it really doesn't much matter what the result is, because you can always come back later, you can always revisit it and say, maybe I was I moved too soon, maybe I could be that guy, I could go back and do it. But they're there to show you to a mirror and to let you see, is this where I need to go right now? Am I up to it? And if not, I think if you know that, like if I knew some of the times that this has happened, that this is supposed to happen, I might be able to say, okay, let me just regroup and come back at some point. And if you, in your case, you didn't, and that's fine. So it was a great lesson. And maybe now you could say, hey, you know what? He was supposed to do that. I made the right decision. Thanks, Jerry.
Yeah, interesting. I wish I knew somebody like you then.
I knew somebody like me then. Well, Dad, guess what? We're at the top of the hour. We have just about a minute left in the show.
Oh, no kidding.
Fast. Down to our last 60 seconds. I just got the voice in my ear from the Blog Talk Radio Lady. So I want to thank you.
I hope I wasn't a major disappointment.
It was great. This is a great opportunity. I'm really so happy to have had you on my show. About time. And thanks for being my dad. Thanks for being on my show. And thanks to everybody who's listening. This was a conversation with Coach Andrew and his father, Art Poritz, and you were there. And we'll be back in a week from tonight. So thanks, Dad, and we'll see everybody next week.
Thank you, Andy. Love you.
Love
Bye.
You too. Bye-bye.